Where No Man Has Gone Before by Chai Chak, read by CookieMom6067. The whirl of the transporter brought them both onto a last-generation transporter pad with a wave of disorientation that Spock had half forgotten used to be considered normal, although perhaps it is Jim's steadying hand on his back that is causing the strange, unsettled feeling in his gut. The Farragut is a clean and neat ship, but there are signs of age and the ever-changing Starfleet design aesthetic everywhere. The once shiny trim is wearing in places, and the carpet may not be as plush as the Enterprise, and the smudge of fingerprints on the panels look like they no longer wipe clean the way they used to. There is a Doppler-like echo in one of the turbolift speakers as they travel around the ship, the crew nodding and smiling at their first officer. Spock points it out in case Jim could not hear it, but Jim just smiles. "Be nice, Mr. Spock. The old girl can hear you." True to his word, Jim gives Spock the opposite of the grand tour, instead showing him all the most intimate corners of the ship, the quirks and the hidey holes, and the interesting scientific research that they are doing as they flit from planet to planet in the Enterprise's shadow. Jim has looked at Spock and determined truths about him most people struggle to understand, his prurience in particular. Spock enjoys seeing cutting-edge science as much as any other nerd, but it has been a long day, so much better to cut to the end. Jim notices something about Spock's posture before Spock even realizes he's tensing up, and excuses them from the babbling Lieutenant Morley, who looks visibly upset at Spock's leaving. "A nightcap, Mr. Spock?" Jim asks at the crossroads. The transporter pads are a few meters away. Spock looks at them and thinks of his bed, thinks of Christine's back to his, her warmth and her sweetness, and how truly alien and other she cannot believe she is, and then looks at Jim Kirk's questioning eyebrows and agrees. Jim brings him to his quarters. He doesn't even make up something about the bar closing. They have bonded over Jim's brother's deficiencies as a person and an officer, and so Spock is relieved upon entering Jim's quarters that neither of them are hypocrites. Jim's rooms are clean as a whistle and neat as a pin, but not impersonal. "I'm moving soon," Jim says. "The perks of the new job means I get a suite on Deck 8. It'll be nice to have more room, but..." He looks around proudly. "It's home, you know." "I understand," Spock says. Jim opens a cupboard to produce a bottle of good scotch and presents it for Spock's approval, and upon receiving it, pours them each a strong measure and hands it over. Jim sits down in an armchair, his limbs sprawling out invitingly as he watches Spock inspect the tchotchkes and detritus of a life in the stars over the rim of his glass, his handsome face cast in the shadows of lights at 45%. Spock takes a sip of his drink and lets it warm him through and politely inquires about the pictures and ornaments before unlatching an unassuming box and raising the lid slowly to peek inside. Jim bounds up all long limbs and body language at battle stations, one hand's long fingers gripped around the sweating glass and one pressed against Spock's to hold the lid of the box closed. Spock gets a burst of fondness, excitement, anxiety, a potent, heady mix of emotion broadcast through the skin. To be on the receiving end of Jim Kirk's seduction is breathtaking. The idle question of what is in the box is communicated through a raised eyebrow, but he nonetheless withdraws his hand, choosing instead to touch the next thing along, which turns out to be an ancient chess set. The pieces of the set are old and worn, a standard configuration, obviously a beloved thing that did not usually live in darkness. "Can I tempt you to a game?" Jim asks, soft and low, but Spock shakes his head. "It is late. I should..." Kirk steps closer and brushes the back of his fingers against Spock's face, his body language politely inquiring but not pushy. "You're right. It is late, Mr. Spock," Jim whispers, and his fingers catch under Spock's chin, and in response, he tilts his own face up ever so slightly so that he can broadcast his intentions, and upon not seeing any rejection, leans in and kisses him gently, barely a brush of lip to lip. As first kisses go, it is a unique experience. Jim is not desperate like Christine was, who is wound up like a spring that could fire her clothes off at any moment. Nor is it anything like the multi-layered courtship of T'Pring, where it had taken a full familial summit before they were even allowed to be alone in a room together, let alone allowed to touch hands. No. Jim kisses like a kiss is enough. Like a kiss can be the whole meal. Like he is a true aesthete, living in the singular moment. The kiss is slow, slick, wet, and hot, and beneath it all, Spock could swear he can feel Jim's mind like an ocean of feeling under a sheet of thick ice, translucent, but only snippets of words floating to the surface like shapes in the dark. He concentrates and gets nothing but images, images of Spock standing there looking handsome and bemused and tempting. Jim's hands slide up Spock's arms and squeeze, and Spock responds by echoing a lingering image in Jim's mind, one of him tangling one hand in Jim's hair and squeezing his grip slightly. Whether Jim knows he is broadcasting, Spock cannot tell, but either way, Jim takes it as encouragement, and Spock feels his mental laugh like lightning striking water, skittering pleasure across his nerves. Jim breaks the kiss, and his wide-open mouth and half-closed eyes are deep as the black of space. "I have something else to show you," he says, his low voice a rumble in his chest, and he takes Spock's hand and walks backwards. It's a particular view, not one a lot of people get to see despite what you may have heard. He chases a kiss back into Spock's mouth, splaying a large hand across the arch of Spock's hip, caressing with just the tips of his fingers, while he maneuvers them around the furniture just so, almost like a dance, twisting and nipping with his teeth to completely disorient him, so that when he gently pushes Spock to lie down on the bed, Spock is in the perfect place for Jim to mount him, straddle him across his aching cock, and devour him, kissing his neck until Spock can feel the green flesh of broken capillaries, Jim's fingers playing along the side seams of Spock's uniform, before dipping underneath the hem to coax it up his chest ever so slowly. "Is the view you wanted to show me your bedroom ceiling?" Spock says, bemused, as his head emerges from the neck of his jersey to gaze straight up at the unremarkable sky. "Got it in one, Mr. Spock," Jim says, laughing and stripping off his own jersey, revealing an appealing expanse of golden skin before getting back to the hard work of good seduction. Spock is not used to being played like the lute. He is far more comfortable putting his fingers on the strings, and so he cups Jim through his trousers and flips them both over, putting his own spin on their coupling. There are the main side points on the face, but any good Vulcan knows that the skin itself is the conduit, and if you don't mind a more diffuse meld, there is a lot that one can do with just intent, talent, and motivation. He feeds Jim back his own fantasies mixed with Spock's own. The sensation of Jim's fevered touch against Spock's skin, Spock's shocked bewilderment at Jim's sensual novelty, and gives him that which he can never experience, and thrills to the hairs on Jim's arms raising like antennae to the thought. They wrestle each other out of their clothes and boots, and then continue to kiss and touch and frot against each other like a single movement. Jim is strong, but his strength is not made with long hours in the mirrored gymnasium preening and peacocking along to a workout plan. His is instead a functional strength, a body honed by long and hard work in artificial gravity and determined self-motivation, diverted along by a battery of sexual creativity. His fingers are as clever as Spock had thought, projected, and hoped, and he lacks any shame for bodies and their foibles. Under the warm recessed lights, he is pink and gold and getting pinker. His mouth is sharp and wet. Whenever Spock feels like he's going to get the upper hand, Jim finds some strangely erotic place to put his mouth, a new angle to bend his limbs, to allow for something full-bodied and terrifying to shudder along Spock's nerves. He should not think of T'Pring at such a moment. But he remembers her curiosity about human sex as Jim applies his mouth to Spock's right ear, as he reaches behind him to the headboard storage, their limbs locked together in some knot of hard bodies and potential energy. Jim produces a hypo spray and a tube of something that is covered in Vulcan script that Spock reads automatically and feels himself flush bright green in response. Jim smirks. I picked it up on Starbase 8 from a very unusual Vulcan woman. Can't read it myself, but I can vouch for it, he says. What does it say? Spock considers all he has ever been told about Vulcan life and secrecy and chooses, not for the first time in his life, to lie. It is a reference to part of the marriage ceremony, he says, and Jim shrugs and opens the tube. Spock has only experienced Kunat Khalifi in his dreams, and there are no scents in dreams, so his reaction to the smell of the lube is more based on the audacious pen of the name, which shouldn't be as hot as it is. Jim takes his time and a lot of the lube coaxing Spock's body through various new and interesting sensations, punctuating any ballooning awkwardness with a string of encouraging filth delivered right into his ear. He ends up slick and curiously open, so aroused it is almost painful, from Jim's mouth fixed to the point of his ear and Jim's hand inside him. Spock's limbs carefully arranged, so that his dick, luridly green and astonishingly erect, is just out of reach, weeping and trembling. He groans and makes noises he's never heard himself make before, until Jim takes pity on him, removes his hand, ducks down and sucks long and slow, until Spock is begging with his mouth and with his mind, his fingers pressed to any skin he can find, sending pleasure back. Jim breaks off and gives Spock a look that is all heat. And then he's manhandling Spock again, biting kisses into his mouth and slicking himself with one hand, putting his lovely body all along Spock's, his sinewy hard front to Spock's arched back, and using the other hand to guide himself until he is pushing in. The feeling of Jim's dick sliding up inside him, where nothing else ever had, it lights him up like a city reconnected after a blackout. A million nerves firing at once in sublime curiosity. Spock pulls his knees under him and breathes hard through it, luxuriating all the while with the distant impression of Jim's mind. His arousal feels like a cloud, humid and blanketing, unable to touch his own, but very much there. Jim arches over him and moves, just a little, and Spock feels it in his cock like he's being massaged from within, like each careful thrust is calibrated to open Spock's mind a little further to the opportunities available up his own ass. He feels it in his muscles unspooling. He feels it in his anxiety when he has an intrusive thought about what he should be doing right now, how he should be in bed like a good officer, preparing for a new day, but instead he is here, on a different ship in the aftermath of a day full of death and new discoveries, making a discovery of his own. He fucks back in counterpoint, old lessons resurfacing, though his father would be scandalized to imagine those lessons being used quite like this. But there's something wonderful that happens when theoretical skills become applied, the very essence of science itself, however prosaic the situation. Spock raises an eyebrow when in Jim's steady athletic prodding, something else lights up, and above him, Jim feels something that tells him he's hit gold, and so digs his fingers into Spock's hips, his thighs, gets a good grip and lifts, and Spock looks back over his shoulder to see as Jim furrows his handsome brow, and oh, there it is, and Spock gives in, lets his head snap back, and swears he sees stars in the prefab white ceiling, and in that moment believes fervently it is the most wonderful place on the Farragut, as he was promised. He stops fighting at that point, and as thanks, Jim expertly maneuvers him and his erogenous zones through a whole manual's worth of sexual positions, three absolutely spectacular orgasms, a small break where he teaches Spock the exact way to bring a man to the edge and hold him there with just a single finger, and then for afters, shows him how to swallow a dick so well that its owner won't be able to help but unload down your throat, and then finishes with the final exam fuck that Spock thinks he will feel in his bones for the rest of his long life. Jim falls asleep, claiming a long day, and Spock proceeds to the bathroom, then gathers his uniform from where it has been strewn on the floor most unceremoniously. He finds that despite the particular hatred he has for Mess, in this case, he really doesn't care. Spock redresses in his uniform rather than replicating a replacement, including what he hopes is his own pair of socks, and after allowing himself the indulgence of watching Jim sleep for a long moment, quietly goes to let himself out. On the way to the door, Spock notices the box that Jim had stopped him from opening earlier. Curious, he opens it, and to his surprise, it is completely empty. He raises an eyebrow to the empty room before leaving to catch the transporter back to the consequences of his actions. The end.